Welcome to the 21st. I'm Jenna Dooley. Convenience. If there were ever a word to summarize a lot of our motivations, that would be it. And the economy has obliged. Perhaps the clearest sign of that is disposable plastic, from disposable cups to takeout containers or coffee stirrers. But it takes 400 years for each of these little conveniences to break down naturally. In the meantime, a lot ends up in Midwestern lakes and rivers. Senator Melinda Bush represents Illinois' 31st District in the General Assembly. The district is located near Lake Michigan. She's co-sponsoring about a half dozen bills to limit plastic waste. 21st show producer Julian Haida recently spoke with her and Leila Acharoglu, a designer, sociologist, and a United Nations Champion of the Earth Award winner. Julian started by asking the state senator why she sponsored the legislation.
We've gotten to a place where we use these things for convenience. We have plastic bottles, you know, that are being used for water. You know, when you can drink out of a paper cup that's recyclable, or you can buy a cup, or you can drink out of a water fountain. So we're looking at a deposit on single-use plastics and bottles. There are a lot of states that do that. We're also doing a plastic bag bill. Many people call that a fee. I call it an incentive. Really trying to incentivize people to not purchase a plastic bag, but to bring their own bags, obviously. You know, so we're not sending those bags to the waste stream. There's also a bill that's been introduced this year that would ban plastic straws, which certainly they're a problem also, but maybe a little bit more symbolic. I think that there's also, I believe, another bill someone else has other than myself that would limit the use of plastics for to-go food and also limit our own state facilities from using those kinds of items. So 1,500 plastic shopping bags are used a year by the average family in the United States, and I think 1% of those actually gets returned for recycling. So those are going into our landfills and into our rivers and into our water, and you know, I believe that single-use plastics has been just really a scourge on the environment and for us as humans.
So it sounds like you're trying to incentivize recycling while also trying to incentivize reuse of certain products.
Absolutely.
So, Leila, you know, it seems like the approach here in Illinois is a good start. It's pretty holistic. But you think that it's important to focus on design as well. What are some of the ways that you think that some of these issues kind of slip through the cracks with regards to sustainability?
When it comes to something as complicated or as pervasive as plastic products in our natural environment and also our entire economy, we need to look at the full picture. And so, of course, plastic leaking into waterways is an absolutely tremendously terrible thing, because not only does it get ingested by sea life that you or I might end up eating, but also it slowly degrades into microplastics, which then make their way into, you know, the food chain, whether it be in salt. You know, there's studies that show that nearly all table salts have microbeads in them from decaying different plastics. So obviously there's the human health impact as well as the marine and natural environment impact. So these are really important issues for us to address. The bigger problem, though, is what we are replacing the products with when we put in legislation that changes the available resources. So, for example, when you put in a bag ban for plastic bags, and the alternative that the retailer or the customer then chooses is paper, then you will increase the overall environmental impact, because the production of paper product obviously still has an impact, but it's actually got to do with the amount of material required to achieve the functionality of carrying the item. Now, this does not mean the solution is to maintain plastic bags. It means that we have to look at it from a full perspective around the functionality of moving goods from your supermarket to your home. And then we need to think of solutions that are what we call closed loop, the circular economy, a whole movement around delivering goods and services so that you and I get our needs met, that it's not uncomfortable for us, but that it's actually with the best preferable outcome for the environment and for the economic impact on the individual. Now, the thing that's often not thought about when we're looking at any disposable product, any single-use product, be it plastic or metal or glass, is that it actually is a huge cost to the average citizen. So you or I are paying for the waste management system to come and collect waste from our houses. So when a producer or a company, say a retail company, chooses to fight against legislation or any design changes, essentially they're putting the cost, the burden of dealing with that waste onto the everyday citizen, which is pretty unfair if you ask me. And so this is one of the bigger motivators for us to actually not just ban things, but to incentivize producers to change the way they create goods and services so that, again, we get portable drinks. You know, we all like to have something that's easy to grab on the go and take to our workplace or whatever. But how can we close the loop? And there are heaps of examples of this where essentially single use is designed out of the system and the functionality of containing liquid or moving goods from a supermarket to your home and back again can be done so in reusable high-value packaging that de-incentivizes waste. So there's multiple benefits to strategies like this. Now, these are more complicated systems for sure. They do take longer and have a little bit more of a cost outlay. But when you can get forward-thinking companies on board and providers, and you've got legislators who are willing to kind of push at the envelope, these are the systems changes that we need. They're more equitable, meaning they're more financially fair and just to everyday citizens. And it means that the cost of pollution is not paid for by you or I, it's paid for appropriately by those who are actually doing the pollution, which is the producers and the retailers and the companies that are making these decisions to replicate these disposable systems.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Julian Haida, and I'm speaking with Leila Acharolu. She's a designer, sociologist, and a United Nations Champion of the Earth Award winner. And also on the line with us is Senator Melinda Bush. She's a member of the Illinois Senate from the 31st District. Senator, I wanted to ask you now, Illinois only has two municipalities, Chicago and Evanston, that limit the use of disposables. So, and to Leila's point, you get fined for use of paper or plastic in those places, $0.07. As a lawmaker, how do you think ahead in the way that Leila's kind of proposing?
These are, you know, some sea changes in some ways for communities and companies. However, we believe it's really important that we move forward. But I do think that we need to be working across the state, not just with the advocates that are supporters, but also with the businesses. Frankly, I had a meeting with Walmart that I was truly surprised. I expected that meeting. They made an appointment with me to talk about the legislation. I expected that meeting to be about their opposition to the bills and their opposition and, you know, the things that they wanted to see. And frankly, I was shocked that they wanted to support the legislation and wanted to be helpful in, you know, in figuring out how we can actually get this done, because it's much easier for a business to have the laws be the same across the state, you know, so that their stores aren't dealing with one thing in Chicago, another thing in Evanston, you know, and another thing in Rockford. So that continuity across the state is actually really important to them. And I think that businesses are beginning to see and participate in our environment. There certainly are challenges. You know, the sad thing is the minute you start talking about these things, you have a group of people that start to just attack you and others that are trying to come up with real policies that are reducing our waste streams, reducing our use of single-use plastics. And their message is we're taxing them. And that's not what this is about. This is about reducing our use. This is about getting us to a place where we are using materials that are sustainable, reusable, and we're, as consumers, we're supporting, you know, our own world and, as she so accurately said, our own economy and our own pocketbook. I grew up in a time where we drank out of glass bottles, we returned them to our grocery stores, you know, they were washed and they came back and they were refilled with the same product. You know, there's certainly questions about those manufacturing issues, but ultimately those that are making these items, the plastic bottles, the plastic bags, and using them are ultimately responsible and have to be paying their fair share.
Now, Leila, we heard a little bit about some of the resistance, and I mean, both Senator Bush and you outlined the kind of the very real economic realities of dealing with waste. But you know, these issues aren't coming very quickly. 13 states in the United States completely don't allow for any sort of disposable regulation. So the systemic dependence on disposables is obviously a huge issue. How do you fight that resistance, Leila?
Yeah, and this is a long story, okay? So disposability offers not just convenience, but also a sense of safety around hygiene and cleanliness. And so the history of disposability is very much connected to this idea of being able to essentially feel secure in your community. So there's a lot of people who really dislike the idea of being inconvenienced in their perspective by having to reuse or to have to think ahead and perhaps take their own product, or the idea of something being rewashed. They don't see that as sanitized. And so there's a lot of misconceptions that exist in the community about the pathway towards a more sustainable supply chain, which is what we're talking about here ultimately. But you see, the thing for me is that I study change, and the thing about change is that a lot of people think it's hard because they get scared of what they don't know. So people are overwhelmed a lot of the time by the idea that someone's taking something away from them. So it's called loss aversion in the psychological cognitive biases space. And so what we have to try and do when we're introducing new concepts to the community is ensure them that that this isn't something that's being taken away from them. It is an option that is going to be beneficial for them and everybody else in the long run. And not just on environmental measures. Like I said, there is clear economic benefits when you look at the whole picture, because the cost of waste management is astronomical. In 2018, China introduced the Golden Sword policy, which means that they no longer would receive the world's recyclable materials. So the recycling industry since then has essentially been in a complete chaotic state. And so the global recycling market has become very turbulent. And so incentives that just increase recycling are not even really going to create the benefit. We actually need to develop these whole closed system solutions. And to the senator's point about big organizations like Walmart and some of the people that I work with, some of the world's biggest producers, they are at the forefront of this because they don't only see it as the right thing to do as against like the sustainable development goals and these ideas of like, how do we do good as a corporate citizen? But also it makes sense economically because, again, waste management, whether it be in the products that they're having delivered to their stores and having to pay for the removal of that waste from their stores, or as a kind of global industry, waste management is really expensive. You know, we burn things, we put it in holes in the ground, or we try to recycle it. But globally, only 9% of all plastic ever produced has ever been recycled. 9%. So, you know, the state of the affairs is that since the 1960s, when plastic was introduced, that's only you know, 60 something years ago, we have dramatically integrated this product into our supply chain. Now, it is an incredible material. It actually saves people's lives because in the medical industry, it's so important. So we shouldn't vilify the actual material. We should figure out when and how to use it appropriately so that it's beneficial and so that the cost to the society is not greater than the benefit. There's always going to be resistance. I mean, the history of the disposable beverage use is a history of Keep America Beautiful. And this is well documented that that was a lobby group from a coalition of different beverage companies in the 1950s set up to enable the easy transition from the reusable systems that the senator was talking about that were prominent. You know, you used to have your soda or your milk delivered in reusable containers. Lobby group set up to help redirect the use to disposable and make it all about the individual's responsibility to not litter versus the industry's responsibility to provide safe and sustainable products into the marketplace. So, but this is all changing right now.
So, Senator, for the last word, do you hope that a lot of these integrated solutions will come not only to Illinois, but the United States?
I am so hopeful. You know, I do believe we're moving in the right direction. I do believe we are going to finally pass some pieces of legislation. Really, all of us believe that those plastic drink bottles, those bags that we're putting into recycling containers, were actually being reused. We know that most of them aren't. You know, what happened is, you know, the virgin market for plastics, the manufacturers can buy virgin materials cheaper than they can buy recycled materials. I do have one question. I don't know if we'll have time. From Layla, I'd like to know what your thoughts are as we're seeing our consumers changing how they're purchasing groceries, et cetera. We have more people that are having delivery, that those things are coming to their homes. You know, how are we going to make sure that they're not using single-use items for delivery? Have you seen anything, any conversations about that going on?
So there's Two great examples I can provide. One is in New York. It's called the Loop System. It was a collaboration, is a collaboration between TerraCycle and Unilever, and it's delivering to customers who sign up anything from your ice cream to your dishwashing liquid in fully reusable containers. So you get them delivered. When you finish, they get picked up, refilled, and replaced with reusables. That system's actually being rolled out in other parts of the US and also in Europe. You also have a great example in Berkeley. It's called Vessel. It's a reusable coffee cup system that's basically based off a library system. So you go to a coffee shop, you grab a coffee, you check it out, you check the coffee cup out, you can drop it in any on the street like a receptacle that then basically takes them, washes them, and that means that you don't have to have your to-go cup on you. You can have like a reusable one. You can just kind of subscribe to this system. So we're seeing examples like that pop up all over the world. And so that's the really exciting thing that's happening right now, is that there are a lot more creative approaches to addressing this, and in a way that makes it much more enjoyable for us as consumers. The pathway to change then is a lot less, rickety. It's kind of more enjoyable. So there are lots of examples. There are also lots of work that still needs to be done in finding these solutions. And there's a huge economic opportunity for those industries that are willing to take this on and move forward with it. Because at the end of the day, you know, finite resources like plastics and other materials, they become economically unviable to waste at some point. So there's a lot of economic motivation behind this change, as well as the environmental and the social benefits.
That was Leila Ajiroglu, a designer, sociologist, and a United Nations Champion of the Earth Award winner. You also heard from Senator Melinda Bush from Illinois' 31st District, speaking with 21st show producer Julian Haida. I'm Jenna Dooley. You're listening to The 21st.